Hello and welcome. I'm Sam Harris, and it is my true honor and pleasure to host you here on the Growth Mindset podcast. I talk to amazing individuals about how they achieve their dreams and break down the strategies it takes to lead explosive tech businesses to being paid to travel the world. I deep dive into topics such as Bitcoin and fintech, or just how to get stuff done, with the goal of increasing our own collective wisdom and making us all happier, healthier, and wealthier. Who doesn't want that?
Hello, hello. I have a very interesting pair of guests on the show today. I have both the founder and the head of growth and marketing for the new app Free Trade, which is an application that basically does what it says on the tin. They allow you to trade for free, so you don't have any margin fees or anything, and life is great. Yeah, it's a really, really cool, innovative product that they're coming out with for the United Kingdom market. So it's very similar to Robinhood, which exists in the US. But don't switch off if you are in the US, because it's really fascinating to learn how someone goes about having the idea to build a free trading platform and then actually does it, because it's not a simple process by any means. And yeah, lots of hard things to overcome and some good growth mindset attitudes going on. So plenty to learn about in life and business, and also advice on cryptocurrencies and stock picking and everything, as you might expect from a trading app. So enjoy the show.
Adam Dawes here, CEO and co-founder of Free Trade. I'm originally from Canada and came over to the UK about 3 years ago with my job. And I was like really, I guess, disappointed in the options available for investing over here in the UK. So decided to do something about it and start up Free Trade and create a new kind of stock broker that could allow someone like myself to invest in the stock market reasonable amounts of money without paying really, really high commissions and fees.
Okay, cool. So it sounds like a great idea, but it's sort of everything you'd want straight away. Is it been difficult actually making it happen?
Yeah, I mean, building a new stockbroker from the ground up is not an easy endeavor, that's for sure. It's a little bit more complicated than most tech companies or apps, let's say, where we have to deal with the normal stuff, such as developing the software itself. But we also have in the background regulatory things, such as permission from this FCA here in the UK, so the regulator. You need to connect with the banking system. You need to connect with the securities settlement system, central securities depository. A lot of different moving pieces. It's quite a complex space. So the level of complexity is a kind of a factor larger than a normal consumer app.
Mm. So when you first had the idea, you thought, I can definitely do this? Or did you have like a research period where you kind of thought about it and looked at how you might do it?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's not something you just kind of wake up in the morning, you're like, man, I'm going to build a stockbroker. My background prior to starting this, I was at KPMG for years, and I was auditing these kind of businesses. So I have a pretty firm grounding on how the businesses work in the back end, as well as how the financials and the business models work. And my kind of research was covering these companies when I moved over to the M&A practice at KPMG and looking at these guys and breaking down their business model and looking at where the gap in the market really was. To answer your question, I have years of practicing for this in advance.
Okay, cool. So it's not like a business that I could just sort of...
don't go start your own stockbroker, Sam. Yeah. It's fucking hard, man.
Yeah. So as we've outlined that, I'm not going to be able to steal that idea. Can you explain a bit more about the business model, like how you actually make money if you're not charging for trades?
Yeah, that's a fair question. We have a freemium model. So the same similar type of model that you'd see at Spotify or almost any software as a service company out there, where the basic service is for free. But then we're going to offer premium services on top of that. So when you sign up for an account, you're going to have an option. You can sign up for a general investment account. That's going to be free. Or you can choose to pay a small monthly charge for an ISA in the UK. That's individual savings account, or a SIP, self-invested pension plan where you they're like tax wrapped accounts, so you don't have to pay tax on your capital gains. So there's a big value add there for our users, and it's a bit more of an administrative hassle for us, so we do charge for those. Well, and you can imagine, you're a smart guy, Sam, there's a lot of other stuff that we could be offering our clients as value adds over the coming years, and that's how we're going to monetize.
Yeah, I was thinking actually, yesterday I was just telling you about my issue with the Bitcoin crash in my automated trading, but like I wasn't able to put enough smart automated trades in. Could you automate like a bit more of an if this then that, where you sort of say, okay, if the price goes past a point but then is coming back up, I want to invest at this point. So don't invest the first time it hits it, only invest if it's coming back up, kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So right now, you know, you can go and do all sorts of different kind of trades with different stockbrokers. Probably the most common would be a limit order, but you can put different tolerances on your orders in advance. And that's what we would consider premium style trades. So a basic trade is going to be free, but the type of trades that you're describing, we would consider premium. We will charge a small commission for this kind of a service. So that's a good question, Sam. And yeah, we're planning on doing stuff like that. Other things like just maybe you're going off to Perth, Australia for a month or whatever, and you don't want to manage your portfolio during that time period, but you want to make sure that if the market moves in certain ways, your portfolio is going to adjust. We're going to offer a service like that, kind of an autopilot feature as well. And again, premium service that we're going to charge for.
That's cool. So how about autopilot for life? Like I just put my stuff in and I come back like 5 years later and maybe.
Yeah, you could. That's pretty close to what robo-advisors do right now. And for us, we think that robo-advisor isn't really a business model. It's just a feature we have on our platform. And we're going to charge, but nothing like what the robo-advisors are charging right now.
Would there be an API for free trade? So if I wanted to make my own trading robot, I could use the free trade API to then be making all these trades?
Yeah. Well, we have an API. That's how we've built the architecture of our product, our back end. It's just a matter of opening that up to others. And we will do that. It's not going to be on day one, as we have 18,000 people that are really raring to get access to our core product. But yeah, totally, we're going to open up the API. We'll let other people build on top of that too, because we don't have every good idea in the world. We'd like to enable other businesses as well, and individual users for that matter.
Yeah, I guess I was more thinking about just people like using it for bots, but yeah, like all different business things could be cool. And then how did you go about raising money to start this idea?
Oh yeah, that's a good question, because Sam, I think you're one of our investors, right? So we did crowdfunding. That's how we've raised all of our money, actually.
Cool. Talk to initial investors or family and friends just to start the idea? You just ran straight to
CrowdCube? Yeah, the cool thing about crowdfunding is you can combine your friends and your family with people that you've never met before that are just excited about your business. So our very first crowdfunding round was back in July 2016. Yeah. And that had a lot of our friends, our contacts participated in that round. But the majority of the funds we raised was actually from people that we'd never met before the round. I know a lot of them now. One of them sitting right next to me, Victor, our head of growth. And he was actually one of the first guys in our first round. And we followed that up with a larger kind of size round. It was 1.1 million back in March this year, and we had 1,200 investors. So I don't have 1,200 friends, but it kind of snowballed from there. And I think going forward, whether we raise money from institutions or not, we're always going to open it up to our crowd and our user base to participate in the company's growth.
Cool. You just had this amazing idea for a business. Oh, we'll just trade for free and then just charge people up top. And then you're like, oh, we'll just sort of instantly put it online and people will pay us. And somehow you raise money straight away. It sounds all quite easy. Was it that easy?
No, I mean, it does sound quite easy, doesn't it? I think a lot of people underestimate how much effort actually goes into a crowdfunding round and how many crowdfunding rounds actually do fail. you put these things out there for the crowd to make a judgment on, and most of them aren't successful, to be honest. It's a bit of a survival of the fittest. But when you do have something that has a strong narrative, a strong mission behind it, that people kind of understand and it resonates with, that's when it really flies. And that's what happened to us. It's just great to put it out to the crowd, and you get a lot of validation from them, and you can kind of feel like you're getting product market fit without even putting the product out there, because just so many people want it.
Yeah, definitely. That's cool.
Sam, I think you participated in the crowdfunding round, right?
Yeah, I participated. I really liked the idea and thought it was great.
What hit with you that made you actually pony up some money?
Yeah, I guess I was just getting really annoyed. Like I just used my Halifax trading account just because it was the, it kind of came with ISA and built in. I already had my Halifax account, so it's just like an extension. But they charged me £12 to buy somewhere and then £12 to sell. And like, it's not great if you're sort of not, if you're trying to invest in quite a few things and stuff. And if you don't want to
be. Exactly, man. That's exactly it.
Yeah. Nightmare. So yeah, I was like, okay, if I could just have an app for doing this for free, I could just sort of, something I could only put 50 quid in, something that I could put in like 2,000, it doesn't matter, and don't have to think about it so much. And you could do more day trading if you wanted, and if it's not really that feasible if you're being charged lots. So yeah, mainly for free, and then everything looked really nice, and you guys seemed quite convincing, I guess. Like a video and had backers and stuff.
Yeah, for sure. You got to have that credibility too, that you can actually execute the idea. It's not just some pipe dream, right?
Yeah, so because I never saw your first crowdfunding pitch. Was it anywhere near as slick, or was it kind of a bit like rough around?
Yeah, it was a bit rougher, to be honest. We didn't have quite the budget for the video.
So here ends the conversation with Adam. And we're now going to go to a conversation with Victor, the head of marketing and growth for Free Trade. And I start by asking him how Free Trade went about the process of raising a second round on Crowdcube, despite the fact that they hadn't released anything or done anything of note since the first round, and what they needed to do to be able to ask for a lot more money, which seems like a difficult thing to pull off.
So fundamentally, if you take a step back and you look at what a Free Trade investors invested into, it's fundamentally a story of building this product at this point. We are on the verge of rolling out. It's been a continuously building story to date. And the first round, it was kind of like a pre-seed round. It was kind of like, you know, starting this company. And it was about making sure that the three co-founders can operate a company. They can cut themselves a small salary, and they can start working on the product. So I would call it a pre-seed round. And if you are investing in the UK, it's actually relatively easy to raise 100-150K. There is this amazing tax incentive called Enterprise Investment Scheme. If you have a good product or a good story, it's relatively easy to raise to the amount of 100-150,000. Well, now that happened in 2016, and basically it's been the three co-founders up until 2017 developing the prototype, making preparations for the authorization, and doing essential things. So for the 2017 raise, it was just really important to get those things into motion and be able to narrate those things. So what we are building and what the guys have been building at that point, you know, it's not a selfie app or something very simple that you can just develop and, you know, just submit to the publishing the app store. It's a fully fledged financial services company. So it takes a long time to build. So in terms of the second crowdfunding raise, it was important to sort of set that narrative. It was still early times in terms of building a financial services company. But I would call that a seed round. Even at that point, the target was to raise 300,000. That for building a stockbroker was actually a relatively small amount. And it really made sense for anybody who invested at that point was actually making a great deal. I think a lot of the investors understood that. But also they were really enthusiastic about a product that needs to exist. There is no great platform or tool to buy stocks and shares. So I think the investors bought into the concept of that. We wanted to raise 300K only. We ended up with more than £1 million. And the money just kept flooding in. We were not prepared to accept that much investment. So we had to manually the campaign. But it was amazing. There is nothing as exhilarating as people being enthusiastic about what you build, and you just see the investment coming in. So that's quite the thrill.
So do you think if you guys could go back in time, you would maybe have done an ICO instead?
Right. Yeah, that's a very interesting question. We looked at the ICO model. I think it might have been that we could have raised tens of millions of pounds easily. Yeah, I guess because our DNA was very much in crowdfunding, it just kind of made sense to go back to CrowdCube. Mm. And we just did not have the bandwidth to investigate the ICO model properly, create a white paper, figure out what token or coin we should release. But if we focused on token, which would be like minerless probably, which is kind of like the new generation of cryptocurrencies, I think that ICO would have been really successful. You know, that said, we are not shedding any tears that we did not do that. It's an unregulated sort of activity, and we just prefer to sort of go the path of higher regulation, if that makes sense.
So on the subject of cryptocurrencies, it'd be interesting to talk about what are going to be the main features on the app that you guys are most excited to build, and where things like cryptocurrencies or something might come in.
The features I'm personally most excited about is the free trades, obviously. Probably not something we need to over discuss, but that's something I personally look forward to. Currently, I'm paying £8 per trade, which is just insane.
Especially when you want to have some small trades. And it's impossible to be like a good investor and sort of be like, okay, I want to spend sort of, maybe I want to put £1,000 in one company, but I maybe want to put it in like £100 chunk so that I can sort of take some out at different times and have like control of what I'm doing. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I want to have that level of control, but on that right now, a couple of other things I'm really excited about is crypto, obviously. So that's something that's been on the top of the wish list quite a lot. So just to give you some context, I get probably anywhere between like 20 to 50 emails per day from users or community members asking to get bumped up on the waitlist, asking about certain very specific stocks that they may want to have, like small caps stocks, those kind of requests. But one of the number one requests is crypto. So we've been having this discussion of whether we want to go into that at all, whether it makes sense for us. And the discussion was about, do we see this as an asset class that people want to invest into? And do we see it as something that's going to be around in a couple of years' time? And the more we investigated the space, the more we became convinced that the answer is yes. Yeah. It's a proper asset class, and it's going to stay around. And I myself sort of plunged into the crypto space, buying mostly Ether and IOTA last year. So I just really like the concept of those cryptos. Basically, one of my major takeaways was that in the UK, if you want to buy crypto with British pounds, it's really hard. If you want to withdraw into your bank account, that's a gigantic. That's just an experience that just should not exist like this in 2018 in our minds.
How would you guys plan to do crypto trading? Would it be like on eToro, where you don't really actually have control of the cryptocurrency, you just can buy and sell it within the app, but you can't do anything with it? Or would you actually literally buy the full Bitcoin and have a Bitcoin wallet and be able to send it somewhere else from free trade?
So caveat, we still have to design the details, but our philosophy is that everything you buy in free trade has to be real, like you own real shares if you buy shares. And if you buy cryptocurrencies, then they have to be real. It should not be something you are removed from, if that makes sense. We are not in the CFD game or the betting game where you bet on, you know, which way the price of Bitcoin is going to move. We want you to have the actual asset. That's what free trade is about.
Cool. Okay, that's nice to hear.
Yeah, I suppose that that's probably good news.
Yeah. Okay. And on the subject of app features, what are you going to have in terms of being able to do social trading and things like that?
So one of the features we look at is sort of user-to-user education, having a community in place, like a discourse forum where people can discuss ETFs or the different theories and theses they have about the markets. or companies or products.
I was thinking it would be very interesting if you're going to have like a sign-up survey where people have to obviously say they know what they're doing, and but also say maybe how much of a risk taker they are, but then be able to sort of anonymously look at their data and see how risky they actually behave compared to what they're saying and stuff like
yes.
that.
The really fantastic thing about a product like Free Trade is that in terms of data, most of it, if not all, that we look at from an analytical point of view would be anonymized and aggregated. Mm. Honestly, some like risk monitoring type. We definitely plan to look at the trends in terms of like personal risk taking. It would be very interesting to see on aggregate how much people sell when there is a crash.
Yeah, and then be able to compare that across like, okay, what about a woman who's sort of in her 30s versus a 50-year-old CEO or something? Like,
yes, very interesting sort of data analytics that can be done.
Yeah. Would you make that data publicly available, or do you think you'd keep it? Or
oh no, so in terms of our sort of data analytics and like trend analysis, we plan to sort of publish as much as we can.
Yeah, amazing.
I think these kind of insights don't really exist right now. I think one way to benefit the investing public is sharing aggregated, anonymized data about what are the popular shares of the week, or you know, these kind
of. That'd be really interesting.
Yeah, I think that's super interesting, and I think that's something that maybe the investors like yourself and even myself, I'd be very interested to understand what the trends are. It can really inform my knowledge.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. That's an extra thing to look forward to that I was not aware of. Okay. You mentioned your personal investing in some Ethereum and IOTA. I wanted to ask, what is your investing strategy in general as part of a company that's doing a lot in the investing market?
That's a very interesting question. Of course, no one should take any actions based on what I'm doing specifically.
Oh, yeah, of course.
That comes with probably our compliance officer would be upset if I'm playing a financial advisor right now. But that said, I'm really keen to talk investment. I really like the public market. You know, it really depends on your personal goals. My personal goal is sort of to become financially independent over time. It's a very lofty goal, living off my investments or the income from my investments. But I think it's like a new trend that I think a lot of people in our generation and younger, they are really big on financial independence, retiring early. So that's something I'm consciously pursuing. And I have a lot of debate in my head in terms of what's more important, high net worth or income, which one do you optimize for? So for me, I think income is a little bit more important. So like dividend, for example, a lot of the public market stocks I'm looking at are dividend stocks. And the way I think about it is I'm personally very heavily exposed to tech. I'm working at a tech startup.
Yeah.
I 12 years ago, I joined Google, and I'm in the really advantageous position that I joined early, and I had a lot of that vested. So I'm really lucky. Nice. But that said, I'm really exposed to tech.
It feels quite safe in that tech's never going away.
You know, we all have these assumptions, you know, be as in people who, you know, who are investors, yourself and myself as well. You kind of have these assumptions in our heads like, yeah, tech is really safe, it's really growing. But if you really think about that, there is a little bit of recency bias there. There's been a lot of surge of tech. Will it go on forever? Probably not. Will it go on for a long time? Probably. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe. Will it crash? Again, I don't know. And these are scenarios that you should sort of have in your mind. These are scenarios you should think of. That said, my sort of approach is that I feel I'm very exposed to technology. So I look at companies that are not traditionally considered technology companies. One of the companies I'm really bullish on is Ford, just because it's a very traditional business. They have a great brand, and it's been a little bit bettered, the stock. So the stock price is relatively low. And at the same time, if you really start researching the company, you start reading the documents, they invest a lot into R&D, into autonomous vehicles as well. And I think just because of how they are configured, being a traditional brand, but they are pursuing innovation, I think that's potentially a valuable company that can reinvest it. Yeah, exactly. Oh, and the dividend yield is really high. I think it's about 4% or something like that, or maybe more. Nice. Another company I really like, and this is just yet another example of a non-technology company that I think has a lot of potential upside, is Nike.
Yeah.
So that's a company that it's got a great brand among the right. It's a great company as well. I think it has a moat because of just how they keep reinventing that. I read a book, it's called Born to Run, which is about running, barefoot running, if you are familiar with the concept.
Yeah.
And it's about a Mexican native tribe that's really great at running. I think they run amazing distances, like 100 miles per day. They live in this really rugged landscape, and that's their mode of transportation. So it's about a guy who went there to understand their philosophy of running. And there's a fair bit about Nike, how Nike has been manufacturing shoes that have really thick soles, and that's for your feet. And at the same time, Nike kind of copped on to the concept of barefoot running, and they reinvented their product line with Nike Free, which I believe is the minimal sole product. So they are getting into these new concepts more readily than probably other companies. Yeah, hopefully you are not going to run out and buy Nike shares right now because they are really expensive in my mind at the moment.
What is your most recommended books?
I set a personal challenge of 50 books this year. It's nothing compared to my girlfriend who reads 80 books per year. So I'm trying to catch up to that, but that's a very daunting target. I like both business books and fiction books. I can kind of see a different role for each genre. I guess, you know, business books to educate myself and to inform myself. But, you know, I sort of have this end of day protocol where I try to read fiction books to sort of like put me to sleep, if that makes sense.
That's exactly what I do.
Sometimes you learn interesting ideas from fiction books as well. Nevertheless, my all-time favorite book would be Chaos Monkeys. That's a book from a Facebook product manager, joined Facebook, an acqui-hire. He was building an ad network, I believe, and he joined. It's a really honest account of life in Silicon Valley. And if you ever worked in at a big tech company, then, you know, just all the stories and the culture you see being described, it just really resonates with you. It's an honestly funny, sort of sarcastic view of that culture. Another book that I recommend is Disrupted by Dan Lyons. I believe he's an ex-New York Times journalist. When he was let go from the newspaper, he joined HubSpot, which is a startup, I think, in the Boston area. And just the culture he experienced there, you know, this is fundamentally a 50-year-old guy who joined the startup and was maybe a little bit bewildered as well as shocked what he saw there. And you can really see it from his point of view of startup culture, how that can be dishonest and maybe unproductive sometimes. So I think it puts a mirror in front of all of us being in this space. And it's an honestly funny account. If you don't mind, I'm looking up my Goodreads. Do you have a Goodreads account yourself?
Yeah, I do.
Sometimes you would wonder how they manage to read all of that.
Yeah, I've been using Linkist as well, which it's not the same as reading a book, but it's useful for filtering out books that you don't need to spend time reading the whole book to get the idea of, and working out other ones that you're like, actually, that's a really useful concept that I've just learned from reading that summary, but I need to read the whole book to actually really understand it and deeply kind of thing.
Yeah. I think it's a very immersive experience. It's kind of like, that's why I like podcasts and books both, because you immerse into that world. So there is a book the author is Alfred Lansing, and the book is called Endurance. There is this Greek explorer, Shackleton, a British explorer who wanted to reach the South Pole. So he took the ship Endurance to the Antarctica, but he got trapped in ice, and eventually the ice crushed the ship. So he ended up on the ice with his whole crew, and I believe over a year trying to survive on the ice. And the fantastic thing is that no one died during that time, which is really a testament to the guy's leadership.
Yeah, what are they eating?
So the wildlife there apparently was not really scared by humans.
Sure.
So they were eating meat all the time. So on their wish list of of food they want once they return to England was usually like sweets,
right?
Which they would not have access on the ice field.
So
they mostly survived on seal meat, and they eventually worked their way back to, I believe, one of these islands of Antarctica where there was a whaling station. So they were picked up. But yeah, it's a fantastic tale of what happened to them.
Yeah, sounds amazing.
Cool. Yeah, another book I really like is this book called Shantaram. That's about an Australian guy who, I think he was a bank robber at one point. He got into drugs, got divorced, got into drugs, robbed a couple of banks to feed his habit. And he got into prison in Australia. He managed to escape and he fled to Mumbai, where he joined the local mafia. So that's again based on a true story as well. The guy's name is Gregory David Robert. So it's a very long, winded book.
Yeah, it's a really long book. I remember being like, oh, I really want to read it. Oh, whoa. Maybe I don't have time to read quite.
1,000 plus pages.
Yeah, I think I need to get the audio book. Put it on like triple speed.
J.D. Vance, who wrote a book called Hillbilly Elegy about the American middle class and the poorer classes in the U.S. and redneck culture, which he kind of grew up in. And he became successful despite that. He firstly joined the U.S. Army and he became a lawyer, having done a law degree. And he sort of documents the culture where he comes from. He sort of explains the thought process that these people would have when they vote for Trump, for example. Yeah, amazing book. I mean, I have probably hundreds of books on my...
Yeah, that's enough.
on my read list and to read list.
How do you go about reading one book a week exactly?
That's an extremely good question. Warren Buffett says that you should make it a habit to read. So I'm trying to make it a habit, but it's really hard at a startup because my schedule varies quite a lot. And then there are getting things done and, you know, things come up. So what I'm trying to do is I wake up at 6, I meditate, I go for a run if the weather is nice enough, or I go to the gym. And when I take transportation, I have my Kindle out and I'm trying to read as much as I can during transportation. And then again, once I go home and I unwind, I'm trying to read an hour probably. But I don't do it every day. I'm trying to do it every day. I'm trying to make it a habit, but a little bit of a struggle to configure my day.
Do you do much audiobooks so you can be reading whilst you're running?
Yes, I have Audible. So I'm trying to progress with books while I'm running. But I somehow always end up with podcasts because it's more, I guess it's more digestible because I can just concentrate on an episode and it's done.
Yeah, I tend to listen to more podcasts mostly, but it depends on what I'm doing. If I know I've got like a lot more time and things to try and concentrate on a book, but also I find I often start to zone out after like 45 minutes if I'm listening to the same book.
There is only so much attention span you can have.
It can be really nice. So certainly whilst I've been ill, on the one day when all I was doing is vomiting and like lying down. Hoping I didn't need to vomit again. It was just lying there with audiobooks on, you know. This is nice.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Okay, cool. So one last question. What's the kindest thing someone's ever done to you?
Oh, you have great questions that I'm not prepared for, probably. I think parents and families is an obvious answer for that, right? But I think it's a cop-out answer at the same time, because I think kindness really matters most when you sort of don't expect it. It kind of comes unexpectedly. I'm trying to think back of really unexpected kindness that I received previously. So I spent a long time at Google, 7 years in total. I worked under various managers and directors, and in total, maybe I worked with a couple of hundred people in total. So there have been plenty of occasions there when I experienced kindness. Probably one of the kindest things from that perspective was I had this director I was reporting to, and I was still relatively new at the company, and I had my ideas in terms of, I want a career, I want to stay at Google, I want to progress. I had a discussion with this guy, and basically what he told me was that if it comes to your career, you have to be egoistic, but also you have to be mindful that it's your 20s and 30s when you can make the biggest progress in your career, and it sort of flattens out. And basically what this guy was saying is that in order to progress, you kind of have to leave my team. And if you think about that, a manager, somebody who manages a department or like a big team, there's a temptation to be egoistic there in terms of, I just want to keep the best people. But basically, what this guy said was that you should like look at other roles. You should explore and you should try to change jobs inside Google or outside even, and sort of progress your way ahead while you are still, you know, 26. And that really set me up. I changed jobs about every 2 years from that point on, and always sort of stepping up in career. And I think it really helped me to sort of build up my experience and my profile, even arguably self-inflicted damage. I left his team probably in 2 months. That was a really impactful conversation, but I really considered that a kind thing, because what I really had in mind was my progress and my career, as opposed to his operational efficiency or whatever sort of KPIs he would have that I would contribute to. So yeah, I think some of the kindest things are when, you know, it's not in your interest to help someone, but you still help anyway. Probably there is, it's really hard to explain why someone would do that. Yeah, it's just really, humans are really complex, right? Mm. And sometimes it's not in your very direct interest. You could just manipulate the person, right? But sometimes, hopefully very often, you just want to do the right thing. You want to help the person, but there's no reason, there is no immediate direct benefit you get from it. But you just take, I guess, pleasure and satisfaction from seeing the other person succeed with your help or support, paying that forward. So from that point on, you know, whenever I had like somebody really, and Google is full of bright people, of course, but whenever I had somebody especially bright on my team, I always encourage them to seek out challenges and opportunities and try to move forward, kind of gather experience, progress inside or outside of the company, whichever made sense. So that was a really kind thing that I did not really understand, only in retrospect, that was an act of kindness.
So that's the end of the interview, and it certainly seems like a very exciting time for the company. So I'm following them closely as they launch this month, May 2018 for future listeners. And if launching a product isn't enough things to be handling, they are also launching their third fundraising round on Crowdcube. So, geez, I mean, like, how much stress does someone want to take on? Amazing. Whew. But yeah, super exciting for them, and to see what they'll be doing to really scale up the product. Fascinated to see what's going on. And as an investor already, just interested to see how it all goes and whether using Crowdcube is a good way to do things. I really do hope to start seeing some interesting analytics on insights into the way that people trade, and I'm looking forward to them doing that. And I'm really looking forward to start using some more automation tactics on my trading strategies, just to free my monkey mind from making crap decisions in the moment that aren't at all in line with my investing strategies, because that's definitely a thing that I do. Okay, now for my top tips from the episode. Man, I hardly know where to start with the top tips. So many good top tips. Although that's a slightly strange comment for me to say, because I know exactly where to start, because I've written out 3 top tips that I'm going to say and then have them on the piece of paper in front of me. So I'll probably start with point one, unless I forget how to count or decide to break all conventions. So, number 2. Wow, surprise, I've broken the convention. Wow. Oh, good, good. Nice one, Sam. Okay, anyway. Number 2, because I'm still going with this one first. Apparently, raising a relatively small, in their words, circa 150k round is not actually that hard, which seems quite big to me. But if it's just a few founders with an idea, and you tell a really good story, and you show that you know exactly what you're doing, you really do just have no excuse to quit your job and bloody do it, because it is possible. So in the UK, it is a bit easier, as we have the SEIS scheme, but there are similar incentives in many countries across all Americas, Europe and Asia, so you don't actually have to fear that much. And wherever you are, you can always find people that will invest in your idea or just incorporate your business in the UK. So yeah, do what you want, or send me a tweet if you want some more advice on this. Tip number 3. Kindness isn't just being nice to your family members and friends, or doing acts that you hope you get paid back for. It's actually about doing things that genuinely help or improve someone else's life without expecting any recognition or thanks. And practicing kindness is actually awesome. And if you start doing things like that, I think you'll really feel the benefits just within yourself rather than any actual material benefits from other people. And now finally, we move on. Sorry, and not moving anywhere. And now finally, we move on to my first top tip, investing. I really like Victor's investing approach of looking for the companies that have maybe been neglected by the stock market, with the newer, fancier businesses like Tesla or Facebook taking the limelight. But these companies actually have a great business model that he looks for and are offering a really decent return. And they've invested a lot of like research and development to keep themselves producing relevant products and selling a really big volume of products. So companies like Ford and Nike represent that. So I'll be honest and say that I didn't even have them on my watch list at all, which shows how crap I am at being distracted by new shiny things, even when I think I'm being sensible. So I also really like the long-term goal of aiming to be able to make a reliable income off your investments, because it's such a great way to be designing your life and really worth thinking about. I'll try and do a full episode on strategies for this sometime in the near future if people are interested, but for now, apps like FreeTrade and Robinhood are really making these sort of options available to young people, even when you're starting with a not huge amount of investment. So this is why I'm very happy to be promoting FreeTrade and talking about them, because it's just so awesome that they're launching and I'm really excited to start using the platform. Now moving on to books. Now, holy crap, does Victor read a lot of books. I followed him on Goodreads, and actually, I really recommend using the service to track your book progress and provide yourself with just a bit more motivation to read more regularly. I'm also very happy to announce that I'm currently beating Victor on books this year, but I do have a slight, maybe small advantage that I've kind of been traveling around the world working on my own projects in my own time and not really doing something as strenuous as launching an entire new financial services-based company. But it still shows that there's no excuse and that he's putting a lot of time into reading a book when he is doing that. So we can all be trying harder. He gave a really big insight into each book. So I don't think it's worth me repeating that for all of them, as we'll be here all day. So I'll just list the names and authors and maybe a quick sentence if needed so that you can write them down if you missed it during the podcast. And of course, you can just hit the link for the show notes and they're all there if you are unable to make notes right now. Or you can follow Victor or I on Goodreads and, yeah, join the club, innit? Right, so number one, Born to Run, A Hidden Tribe, Super Athletes, and the Greatest Race the World Has Never Seen by Christopher McDougall. Yeah, whatever. And number two, Chaos Monkeys, Obscene Fuel... God, I can't speak. Chaos Monkeys, Obscene Fortune and Random Failure in Silicon Valley by Antonio Garcia Martinez. Number three, Disrupted, My Misadventure in a Startup Bubble by Dan Lyons. Number four, Endurance, Shackleton's Great Adventure by Alfred Lansing. This is the book about the team whose ship sinks in the Arctic. And something I hadn't realized was that this happened in 1915, which makes it slightly more incredible when they must have had really crap gear. But it seems a bit obvious, otherwise they probably would have just been able to contact someone. But anyway, I thought that was cool. Number four, or maybe five, I don't know by now. Hillbilly Elegy, A Memoir of a Family and Culture in Crisis by J.D. Vance. And the last book, Shantaram by Gregory David Roberts. Now this book is incredible and beautifully written, but geez, is it long. It really should be like a trilogy, because I think that's probably the best way to approach it, is I think I'm about a third of the way through now, and as I'm in India, I really should be reading maybe the second part of it. I've also been chatting to an actual real-life hitman based here in India, so it's a pretty poignant read for me right now. I should probably break that point down for you as to why I'm chatting to a hitman. So yeah, in one of my upcoming podcasts, I have one of the members of the anonymous, in quotes, hacking group, who you may have heard of as... they brang down a lot of the major world banks last year. And boy, that's a really good podcast, because he's a super interesting individual. And anyway, this individual invited me to certain chat rooms in the dark side of the internet where you can literally hire people to kill other people or whatever else you might want, which was pretty weird. And yeah, so I've been talking to a hitman who seems legit on doing a podcast about how the hell you go from someone who has a normal job to end up being a person who kills people for a living, which is a really, really weird story. And yeah, pretty mind-blowing the way he ended up doing that. But anyway, I'm maybe a little bit worried about actually meeting him, or if maybe I'll have to just read out some of the transcripts from my conversations with him rather than risk losing my shit or getting killed just for the name of journalism. So it's also quite hard to get hold of him, as all our conversations have been anonymous and I have no idea when he might not be online or where he lives, other than he lives somewhere in India. So we'll see what happens there. And yeah, exciting times for the podcast ahead is all I can say. And yeah, if that seems like a weird thing to be talking about, it's completely appropriate to Shantaram, because that's all about this Australian guy who joins a drug gang in Mumbai and does things like killing people and stuff. Anyway, on that note, we are finished. So yeah, make some time in your life to start trading on free trade and doing more reading. And remember to be a kind, lovely person, and stay tuned for the next episode. Or listen to some of the old ones, like I think episode number 13 with Eamon Carey is also good for anyone interested in investing. Yeah, maybe try that out. And otherwise, yeah, have a great week.
You've listened to an episode of the Growth Mindset Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on your preferred app and give me a good rating. If you are unable to give good feedback right now, try sharing the show with a friend who will, or just wait for the show to improve. If you have any ideas for the show or you just want to reach out, I'd love to talk to you. On Twitter, I am at SamHarrisTweets, or Instagram, SamJamSnaps. Show notes, along with links to everything that we discuss, are available at growthmindsetpodcast.com, along with information on how to get involved and blog posts on cool things that you should be aware of. Thanks so much for listening, and I hope you enjoy your next podcast.